And that takes us on to the third movement, which is another movement of reconciling and harmonizing within us. And it's in some way it shows Osuna in his sort of way of thinking that is quite contemporary and holistic. Because he says that a movement that we need to be on the alert for and watch out for is the reconciling between sensuality and reason, between our sensual nature and our mind, between body and mind would be the more sort of colloquial phrase for it. And he sees this as an important spiritual movement for us to be looking out for. He uses the story, the Old Testament story of Hagar and Sarah. And Sarah represents the mind, the reason, and Hagar represented the sensual nature. And he says that Hagar, who was exiled to the desert, the angel was sent to Hagar to welcome her back from exile. So if we are disconnected from our bodies, our body needs to be welcomed back from exile, is basically what he's saying. But it also needs to be put under the jurisdiction of reason. And that would be the other extreme, where our bodily needs are totally in control. And so there needs to be that kind of ordering of our desires and needs. And so we're needing to make conscious what our bodily needs are. And so here again, guarding the heart, if we go back to our saying there, guarding the heart means perhaps including the experience of the body in our listening, and making full use of thoughtful reason. Both and. So guarding the heart can mean including the data, the information, the sensations and feelings and everything that the body holds in its body memory, a part of our self-listening, and using our reasoning mind in a thoughtful way. And those two are not dispersed, but they are kind of gathered together in a practice of self-listening. Is that recognizable as a movement, a spiritual movement? And certainly nowadays there's much greater understanding, I think, and appreciation of the need to include the body in our spiritual development. I am going to be going through these different movements quite quickly, so I do realize that each one we could spend a long time over, but I'm wanting to give a sense of the whole of all the movements working together, slowly intensifying and deepening. They're not kind of stages that we can sort of tick off. You know, well, now we've got that and then that and that. But there is it's how all of these movements together worked and slowly intensify and deepen and almost concentrate into this dynamic way of being alive, which is recollection in God. The next four movements are going to take us into a slightly quieter kind of movements. They are more contemplative, more interior movements. And the first of one them that Asuna says that we can be discerning of these next four is the desire that comes from the heart of desire for solitude. But before we actually move into how he saw that, let's find another saying that for these particular four movements of gradually becoming there are these sort of quietening movements, more interior and deepening movements. There's a saying that's particularly helpful, and it's the second one on your sheet of paper there. Let's just have a look at it. It's actually the heading for one of his treatises, because in all his in most of his writings, he used the practice of having a pithy saying or a wise saying, and then he would use that as a kind of a coat hanger for his reflection and on his experience of his own inner life and of those that he accompanied, and also his theological understanding of it. So this one is, he says, this is an approach to God, how we are to be with God, he says, in this more interior way, is to be with God blind and deaf and dumb and always meek. There's almost implicit in there a sort of gesture of rehearsal for quiet meditation, to be with God blind and deaf and dumb and always meek. Does it remind you of the three little monkeys? But it's a completely different kind of way of using the saying. To be with God is blind and deaf and dumb and always meek. And here he's referring not to the kind of blindness of sin, or he's referring to a kind of positive blindness and deafness and dumbness that in a way helps us to see more clearly and to hear more clearly and to be not to be spoken within. So it's a particular way of using this language. He's talking about if you are blind, deaf and dumb, it's a new way of perceiving in prayer. So this fourth movement that we refer to, this growing inclination towards solitude that seems to arise spontaneously from the heart, from within, actually wanting this kind of aloneness. And this can have an exterior meaning for us. It can mean a simplification in our life where we make sort of very specific decisions to make our lives less complicated, so that there is a movement from many, many concerns to few. And it can also, most importantly, have an interior dimension of solitude, where there is a letting go or becoming deaf in the light of our saying to, in prayer, of our the busyness of our thoughts, the noise of our thoughts, or the demands of our thoughts. So that is the more sort of interior working out of it, that as we have an increasing desire to be silent, to be alone, not with your thoughts, but almost becoming deaf to them, because your attention is drawn in a more single-minded way to the divine within. So what that movement looks like is perhaps a movement within a desire for single-minded, undivided, simple attention in silence. Single-minded, undivided, simple attention in silence. And closely connected to that is, we may notice that there actually is a calming of what he calls a calming of our senses, and the calming of the need for intellectual stimulation, for ideas, or calming of the need for to be stimulated by the beauty of things, even though that may be very good, but not needing those things in the same way in your religious practice, in your spiritual practice. So he says it's a movement of quieting or calming perceptions and thought and speech that comes from within. And it's part of what he calls the darkening of the mind. And this is a spontaneous thing that happens within the heart, and to be looked, to be on the lookout for. And often people may express that in conversations about their life of prayer, where they feel that a way of praying, perhaps that's been quite a word-orientated way of praying, no longer kind of works for them. And they may feel overwhelmed by too many words, it's all too much, because there's this growing need from within to be still and quiet. And what has been what is happening here is this desire growing for a much more immediate and much more heart knowledge of the divine within that is not mediated by ideas and thoughts. And so even if you have spent a great deal of time and effort of studying theology, the whole study of it takes on a different connotation as you, or different feeling about it. It's not any less important, but it's just that you make the distinction, are able to see that ideas about God are not the same as this very direct and interior apprehension of the divine within. So in terms of our saying, this is what being blind in a positive sense, and in the sense that he's using it here, to be with God blind means letting go of the images and the thoughts about God. It's about being dumb. He says someone who is dumb and can't speak can't initiate speech. So it's more a way of praying that begins to develop, where you are not initiating any speech, but simply being more receptive. suffered being with God blind and deaf and dumb. And then there's that last bit, and always meek. And I think he has some very challenging and interesting ways of understanding meekness. Because he says in the sixth movement, which is actually really intensifying the earlier movement of bringing together and gathering to collecting up the body and spirit. So it's an intensification of that, a deepening of that. He says that there, in the spiritual life, there is this gradual focusing and tempering and harnessing of the physical instincts and energies. So far from it being a kind of spirituality that abandons or oppresses or even demonizes the instincts of sexuality, of aggression. He refers to those as the irascible powers of the human being. These need to be integrated and tempered so that they can be part of the energy and strength of recollection. He also points out, just in a very matter-of-fact way, that when someone begins to integrate these energies, these physical energies, into their spiritual life, very often that brings a kind of intensity to it, where they may have experiences of rapture. So that's the bird there he uses. It's a symbol of rapture. But he says that is for some people do and some people don't. But it's not the measure of your degree of recollection. But it can be a helpful part of it. But some people go the way of a recollection, which he says is more like the desert way, the desert recollection, where there's no mystical experiences in any dramatic way. And he points out that it's necessary for us to know that both paths seem to be a possibility, so that you don't overemphasize either one as the only experience. We are all unique in our path. And so there is this tempering of energies in the members of our body, is the phrase that he uses. And he then, if we look at this being with God in a meek way, he connects meekness with a way of being where all the powers of and instincts of the body have been tempered and gathered in, not repressed or ignored. So to be meek, as far as Asuna is concerned, and in his understanding of meekness as being part of the way of the Beatitudes, is to be fully human, where all of those are integrated and a part of it. And so this piece of recollection we see in his understanding is a way of being very fully and more human than less. And meekness is nothing, it's not a kind of passive, repressed kind of peacefulness. It's very full of the tempered instincts, giving it energy and life. And then the last of these movements in this part of the movements of gradual intensification, almost like culminates where, and this is where it's all been going to. And this movement here is an increasing ability and desire for self-giving. It's a beginning to be the emptying of the self, the emptying movements, he would call them. So this way of becoming blind and deaf and dumb and meek is his way of talking about the Christian understanding of emptiness, which is critical for the kind of depth and maturing of faith within the way of the heart, of which he was a great follower. Emptiness of this, emptying of the self, is necessary because it is into the kind of emptied self, the emptied heart, that is not full of its own concerns. There's a kind of roominess there that makes space for God, or it makes space for those deep interior intuitions of wisdom. It makes space for getting in touch with the flow of virtue. So this is a completely different kind of goodness he's talking about. He says that there's a flow of wisdom and virtue where it's not the kind of moral decision-making that is you know, I will do this in order to do the right thing. It's from within. There's a growing desire for goodness. So it's coming from the heart. And into this kind of greater freedom and free space that you've been developing within you will come a natural flow of wisdom, of insights. It says the virtues and wisdom enters effortlessly into the heart. So it's making room for those kind of intuitions that enter into this more silent, more spacious feeling that you have within you. So being blind and deaf and dumb is really a way of talking about this necessary weaning away from our reliance on our usual way of knowing and willing of the self, and which is not really adequate in the end for becoming wise or good. It reminds me of Paul saying, you know, that I know what I would, the good that I would do, but I can't. And this is the sort of way that goes beneath us, where the goodness is coming as a gift almost from within, and it comes in the form of insights, inspirations, and subtle communications of spirit. So the way of recollection is the way of discerning those insights and inspirations and communications within. So to be with God, blind and deaf and dumb and always meek. Let's have a break, and we can come back to the last one, and then there are just a couple more movements that go with that. Shall we do that? It's 11 o'clock, and shall we have a 20-minute break, and there's some tea and coffee. If you can help yourselves, it would probably be the best thing. It's in the kitchen, on the counter there, and the cups and everything is out.